Welcome to the Mom's Day Bunker with Carrie Henson. In the bunker, you will find joy, grief, laughter, and remembrance. It is a safe place for moms to gather during the storms of motherhood, to share stories and to encourage each other as we navigate doomsday moments that change the trajectory of our path as women. Our stories contain difficult subjects that may be triggering for some listeners. These are real stories from real moms that are surviving, have survived, and are thriving after the unthinkable happened. Please take care of your mama heart as we cozy up together, take shelter from the world, and begin.
My motherhood began in my childhood, essentially, because I have one sibling. He's 2 years younger. And he was born with a ton of birth defects. And our family life became all about taking care of him, keeping him alive, all of the emergency runs to the hospital and the upteen jillion surgeries and all that kind of stuff. That just was our life. And my earliest memory is of my mom saying to me, "I need for you to be a big girl now because the baby is sick." And I know that she was really just trying to survive, you know. She was in her own way trying to survive. But as that firstborn, you know, all those firstborn things of like, I want to please and do the right thing. Boy, that all kicked in at 3 years old. And I became the good little girl who was super helpful and really a third parent to my brother, because he needed a lot of help and I needed to be pretty self-sufficient in order for my family to survive. Mm. So in terms of when did I start mothering and caring for people, I was probably 3, if I'm really honest. Yeah.
And how old were you when your firstborn was born?
Yeah. And when I actually became an actual mother, I was 34. I got married late and we got pregnant right away. And my oldest was born in 2007 and I was 34. And so I had my 3 kids at 34, 36, and 39. So, yeah.
What was that like? What was that like becoming a mom after being a mom for so long?
Well, it was one of those things where I always knew that I was supposed to be a mom. I always knew that I wanted to be a mom, probably because I had already been doing it in a certain capacity. And so it was like, I know I can do that. I know that I can handle that. I don't think I really knew what I... that was the thought in my head. Was there was a lot of identity for me around motherhood, and like my I would have purpose and value if I became a mother. And so I think in my head, like I said, I got married at 33, and so prior to that I had thought, well, if I don't ever find a husband, I'm just gonna figure out a way to have a baby on my own, because I know that being a mother is something I really want to do. And then I met my husband, we got married and got pregnant, 3 months into our marriage. And yeah, being a mom, I loved it, but also there was so much trauma in my childhood that I had not ever fully processed. And there was a lot of trauma around my firstborn being born. And I found myself just being swallowed by all of the trauma that we were experiencing. And it just became survive that, survive that, survive that. And so in terms of getting to actually connect to what it is to be a mom in those moments with a newborn, that wasn't something that I really got to cherish and hold as much as I think I really wanted to.
Yeah.
And that I looked forward to. Yeah.
Yeah. So you mentioned the trauma around your firstborn being like his birth, like, was it a birth trauma? Like, what, can you tell me more about that?
Yeah. So, I mean, basically, I ended up having to have an emergency C-section after like 36 hours of labor that never progressed, and, you know, and they did all the things and it just never progressed. And so I ended up having an emergency C-section, which I was upset about, but it was like, it's okay. You know, I'll have a healthy baby. And then they had to take him away to Cook Children's in Fort Worth. And he was born in a smaller hospital that didn't have a NICU in about 2.5 hours from Cook Children's. And so because I'd had an emergency C-section, I didn't get to go with him. So I had to stay and had to like put my husband and my newborn baby on an airplane just a few hours after he was born. And so that was horrible in and of itself. And then 2 days later, I got to join them at Cook Children's, and they said that he was not urinating, and it was in the nurse's orders to teach us how to catheterize him because that was going to be the way that he urinated for the rest of his life. I haven't always been in my life, but in my early 30s, I started following Jesus. And so that was a huge part of this whole thing. When they brought him to me in the hospital before I had to send him away to Cook Children's, I just grabbed him, and the first thing I ever said to him was, I don't know what's going on, but you're healed. And so we have been praying. We had everyone in our church praying. My mother and father-in-law were missionaries, and so they had literally people all over the world praying. And I get there, and they're teaching me how to catheterize him, and it's not working. And she pulls the catheter out, and then he all of a sudden pees all over her. And we were like, well, what's going on? And then that night, they texted us that he had had 2 wet diapers. And my husband's uncle, who's a doctor, was like, little newborn babies don't do that. Like, they don't not urinate for the first 3 days of their life and then all of a sudden start urinating. Like, that's not. And so we just really attributed that to, you know, God's answering some prayer here. But they did an MRI and said he's going to have to come back in 9 months for another MRI. And so for the first 9 months, every time he had a wet diaper, a bowel movement, could kick his legs, any of that stuff, we were excited because they were looking at the possibility of this issue with his spinal cord and him being incontinent, him being paralyzed, all of those things. And so at 9 months, they said, yes, there is a piece of tissue that connects to his spinal cord. We do need to cut it because as he grows, that could cause the spinal cord to snap and then he would be paralyzed. And so we were like, okay. So we just continued to pray that God, you cut that. You cut that so that the doctors don't have to. And it was a very tumultuous and hard 9 months. We go in and put our 9-month-old in for surgery. And the real miracle of it is that they went in for a 2.5 to 3 hour procedure. And the doctor came out after 30 minutes and said, we're done. And we said, what happened? And he said, well, we've actually never seen this before, but we went in there and there was the tissue and it went into the spinal column and did not connect to the spinal cord. It just stopped. It didn't connect. And we said, have you ever seen that before? And they said, no, we've never seen that. And we said, we really believe that because we have so, you know, faithfully just prayed, God, you cut it. You cut it. And he answered our prayers. So,
wow.
So, yeah, so that was that whole experience of that. But also in that time from his birth to the surgery at 9 months, I don't know what we were thinking, but we got pregnant again and had a miscarriage. And so there was, you know, that whole thing happened. And then shortly after my son's first birthday, got pregnant for the third time with our middle son. And so it was real fast, like one thing right after another. So we were, it was like we had jumped on a treadmill and didn't know that there was a stop button, you know?
Yeah.
We just,
wow.
Yeah.
I felt like there are two thoughts running through my head right now. And maybe it's because it's in a kind of a similar place that I find myself. But the first thought is, girl, you had a cesarean and traveled 2 hours after it. Because I've never had a C-section, but I have heard they are very painful. Like the recovery time is harder, slower. You have to be more careful. And you're like, all right, I got to go. I got to see my baby. Got to go.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, man. I don't know. I tried really hard with my other pregnancies, especially my third, to have a natural birth. But again, it didn't work. And I had to go have, so all I've ever had is C-sections. So that recovery is all I know. But I have friends that had vaginal deliveries and they bounced right back. I have a sister-in-law who had a vaginal delivery and had so, like, it took her years, honestly, to heal from mm-hmm. what all happened with that. And then I have my C-section experience of, well, you don't get to lay down. You got to go get up and go be with your baby in the hospital. And so I just did.
And yeah, I think that survival just kicks in. That adrenaline kicks in. That mommy mm-hmm. instinct kicks in. You just do it. But I'm sitting here listening to your story going, oh, how did she do that just having had a C-section? That's where my mind went. I don't know. I'm weird. But then the other place my mind went is like, I cannot imagine. So when you carry trauma, you're carrying just a backpack full of bricks the time. Like you sleep with it, you shower with it, you drive with it, you eat with it. Like it's just always on you. And you had a C-section and your babies and a medical crisis and you're out of town, that you were mm-hmm. away from your home, right?
Yeah.
You bring them back, you're praying really hard and you get pregnant, you lose a pregnancy, you get pregnant again and you're carrying this backpack of trauma with you. Were you aware of that at the time or were you just kind of like one step in front of the other?
So I knew that the road I was walking looked and felt so much harder than what anyone else around me seemed to be experiencing in their motherhood journeys. But my childhood was so full of trauma with this disabled brother that was always sick and going to the hospital. And so I think there was a part of me that thought, my lot, what's the thing that's going to bring me some relief, you know? I think it's taken me a long time and a lot of healing journey to be able to go, oh yeah, that's actually not normal. That's actually not most people's experience. And there's a lot of compassion for you, Amy, for the fact that you showed up really messy in a lot of ways with your kids, with your husband in that time. But hey, there's a good reason why. There's a really good reason why you did. And you're not bad or permanently damaged or any of those things. But this is not what most people have to carry. And the truth is, I've done so much work for such a long time, but it's only been in the last few years that I've been able to really connect into, oh, the way to like shed some of those bricks that you're talking about mm-hmm. is to just look at myself, my 34-year-old self who was newly married, a new follower of Jesus, brand new mom, who still hadn't really healed from so much trauma in her childhood, and go, hey, you make sense. You make so much sense. No wonder you're showing up like this. You've got so little support you're just doing the best you know how to do. And so I can unload a lot of shame and some of those bricks when I can go back to 34-year-old Amy and go, oh, you tried so hard and you honestly showed up so well considering everything you were carrying.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not there yet, Amy. I'm not there yet.
It is the thing, Carrie, that I've been on this healing journey for 15 years. My oldest is 16, and I knew pretty much right away, like, I got to get some serious help because this everything, my marriage, my everything is crumbling around me, and I don't know what to do to hold on to it. And so I started this journey a long time ago, but it's really only been in the last few years that I have been able to get the pieces that I needed to go, oh, I had to go through things that most people don't, and I had to go through them already carrying a backpack full of bricks and add to it in a big way. So expecting myself to be able to do it well, to show up really strong and brave and fully regulated and with all the kindness and peace. No.
Yeah.
I mean, I did expect that of myself at the time and beat myself up constantly because I couldn't do it. But shaming myself and willing myself to do it better did not produce the result that I wanted. But what has brought me more to a sense of peace is going, there's a lot of compassion and a lot of understanding for that younger woman, the younger version of myself, who was genuinely trying as hard as she could and wanted the very best for her marriage and for her family and for her kids and for her own motherhood, was doing it with three backpacks full of bricks, you know?
Oh, just, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Like it's hard to, I try to remind myself to love myself the way I love my children. Mm. And that is so hard sometimes because I had a childhood trauma, but then I've had all these adulthood traumas with the things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think I've compartmentalized each trauma, right? It's like, okay, I'm going to fix this one and then I'm going to go to therapy and fix this one. And then I'll do this mm-hmm. one. I don't think trauma works like that. I don't think it really compartmentalizes itself inside your soul or your brain.
And
it's
not a list of boxes that we get to check and be like, oh, sexual abuse, check, done, dealt with that one. Oh, you know, parents never home. Oh, check, dealt with
neglect,
that.
Abandonment, all things. Yep. I wish it would because I love making lists. I love checking the boxes. Like it's my favorite thing in the world. And you know what? That's not how trauma works.
Nope.
It's not how it works. And I think that's the struggle with it, especially if you have trauma in your motherhood, because it's different than trauma in your womanhood.
Mm-hmm.
Like that is a totally different beast, but then you're going to add these perfect, innocent little beings that come into your life that you chose to have.
Yeah.
And boy, you don't want to screw them up the way your life was kind of, it's like my life led me to this point. I don't want them to experience what I experienced. And then those experiences happen inevitably anyways.
Yeah.
Maybe on different, you know, different subjects, different levels, whatever. But it's just it's an ongoing playlist of what can you do next? What's going to help you heal this part of you?
Yeah.
Because I don't think there's one thing that's going to do it all at once.
I was actually talking to a friend about this just this morning. And I said, cause she has a daughter that has been through pretty intense amounts of trauma and they're trying all of the different things to help her. And I said, the thing that I've learned after running after inner healing therapy, inner healing ministries, all kinds of things for years and years, is that I always wanted something to be the thing that fixed me. Mm-hmm. I always want, this is going to be the thing. This is going to be the thing that heals the trauma. And then I get to experience life the way everyone else who doesn't have this trauma is experiencing it. Mm-hmm. I will get to do that. And what I told her is, I said, first of all, it's taken me a long time to learn, but that's not actually ever going to happen. My experience of this world is not going to be what other people's experience is. I have my experience based on the trauma and the blessings, honestly, that have been a part of my experience. And there is healing, but I don't ever get to check that box. And now all of a sudden my nervous system can handle things the way that, you know, other people's that haven't had the same trauma handle it. And that's not going to happen. But what I think all these different healing, modalities have done for me is they've just filled me with a lot of tools. I said, if what I've been given to do is build a house, because my system since I was a little girl has needed to feel safe and protected and secure and surrounded, all these different tools that I've learned from all these different healing modalities that I have done have just been putting lumber and nails and hammers and screws and chainsaws and all of the tools that I need to build this house, been giving me all of those. I know that what I've been doing is standing here going, someone just built the house for me and then let me live in it so that I don't have to do this by myself. Like, that's what my
system. You're so tired. You're so tired. Tired. So yeah. Tired. Yes.
But I was able to like put that analogy on it and go, oh, wait a minute. I see walls going up. Like, there are walls actually going up on this house. It may not be as far along as I wanted it to be at 50 years old. But I am using these tools. I am building this house. I am learning how to feel more and more secure and safe inside of myself, because I'm applying all of these different tools that I've learned. I'm not ever going to get that. Like, what I have in my relationship with God is that, yes, he is my rescuer, but he's come to like do it all with me. He's building the house with me, but he's not actually going to tell me to go lay down and take a nap. And when I wake up, my house is built. That's what I want. I want that.
We want that with Jesus. We want that with pills. We want that with alcohol. We want that with
food.
Food. We want that with shopping. We want it with everything.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
you're right. I mean, at the end of the day, you have to build your own house.
At the end of the day, I have to build my own house, and it's probably going to take longer than I want it to. And I'm going to go, well, why didn't this tool work? Why didn't this tool work? Well, because you don't use that tool on that part of the house. But yeah. I didn't know that, and it's a trial and error that I got to figure out. And I'm just now at the place where I'm able to say, "And Amy, that's okay.
Yeah,
it's okay that you haven't known how to use those tools perfectly in the right spots at the right time. It's okay that you have chosen food or television or whatever, you know, or codependency or any of those things." That's, you're not bad for that. You're a human who's been trying to survive some really hard stuff.
What did life look when number two came around?
We were still just sort of riding on the wave of, not knowing truly. My husband and I didn't know how to really connect with each other. We didn't have any tools. And while people around us were very kind and loving, none of them had any tools either to help us process the pain and trauma that we had experienced, you know, with our first child. And we'd also had some trauma just start from the get-go of our engagement. It was like kind of one trauma thing after another. And And I'm using that word a lot, which I know that there can be an overemphasis on trauma and people think like, really, was that traumatic? But when you think about what your nervous system needs to feel regulated and in that window of tolerance where I can handle hard things without getting into fight or flight or, you know, just completely shutting down. And like, I didn't know what that was like. I had no experience of that just like normal regulated place because everything was so high stakes and so high trauma all the time. So when our second one came along, we had just sort of learned to survive there, you know, and kind of we're like, well, I guess this is what life is. And had some challenges with him, but nothing like what we had with our first one. It was more things like he was jaundiced when he was born, but not bad enough to need to be in the hospital and be under bilirubin lights or anything like that. But that caused some feeding issues and weight issues, and we had to work through stuff like that. So we were like, these are like more normal problems that we're dealing with. And then when he was about 7 months old, our best friend died of a drug overdose. And so, yeah, we had a 2-year-old and a 7-month old, and took, you know, we're helping her and just grieving that process ourselves because we were all just going, could we have done something different?
Yeah.
Could we have been better friends? How could we have shown up differently? What could we have done? You know, so.
Were your parents around during this time for support?
So my parents divorced when I was 21. My mom lived in the town that we were in. My dad lived about 2.5 hours away. My mom was there, but she was starting to have early signs of early onset dementia. So somewhere in my second son's first year of life, we started noticing little things that she was doing here and there that were like, that's odd. But I was so like, listen, I'm going to be a mom. This is going to be my journey. I get to have this. I get to have this. This, I've wanted this. I get to have this. So I was just super locked into, I get to have this thing that I want in being a mom. And I'm trying as hard as I can to make my family work. And so I wasn't paying as much attention to what was happening with her as maybe I would have been if I hadn't been trying really hard to make this part of my life work. And she had really started to show more and more signs of things just being off. In my second son's first couple of years of life. And then when my youngest son was born, we knew we had already gotten to the place where like, she can't babysit the kids like that. She hadn't, we were like, we knew we couldn't trust her to keep the grandkids, by herself. And my third son was born. And when he was four, she had already started doing some things that we were like, oh, we don't know what to do about this. And then when he was 4 weeks old, so I had a 4-year-old, a 3-year-old, and a 4-week-old. And the doctors told her, you can't live on your own anymore. You can't drive or cook or live on your own anymore. And because my only other sibling is disabled, my parents are divorced, it fell to me to be her primary caregiver. And so that was, again, I just sort of strapped on all the backpacks with all the bricks in it and strapped the baby onto my body and a toddler in each hand. And off we go to the retirement homes to try to find somewhere that my mom can go, that she's going to be cared for on a daily basis. And I'm the point of contact for all of her medical care and all. Yeah. And so we launched into doing that. We had to move her out of her house. In that whole process, my husband's job was downsizing and he hadn't been there very long. So he lost his job.
Oh my goodness.
We had to move into her house, which that was a huge blessing. We were looking at buying another house because we were full on outgrown our house. And we were like, okay, well, we'll move into her house as we move her somewhere else. And then my husband started a whole different career. And all of those things happened in the course of about 6 months. And so we get, and the whole time, I mean, this is when social media is really, you know, picking up and everyone's on Facebook and all the time. And I tell you, it was so poisonous to my system. And I didn't know that it was poison to my system to look at people's Facebook feeds and see their mom experiences that they're posting, their highlight reels of their momming, and just be crushed in shame of why does my life not look like that? Mm. Like, it was devastating to me. I didn't have any kind of reasonable perspective of, Amy, the fact that you get up in the morning, brush your teeth, brush your kids' teeth, feed them breakfast, and get them safely to preschool, the fact that you are doing that means that you are winning at life in a huge way when you consider everything you're carrying. I didn't know that at the time. I didn't have anyone telling me that at the time. I didn't have anybody coming in to help me with any of it at the time. And so I was crushed under the shame of, you're not doing what they're doing. And so you're failing as a mom. This one thing that you wanted more than anything, and you're failing at it big time, girl. And that was, yeah, that was the most devastating thing for me. And somewhere in the next few years, after we started caring for my mom, I just had this realization of, yeah, but their life may look like that. And I still hadn't put it together. Like, their life doesn't look like that. That's their highlight reel.
It did not look like that.
Nobody's life looks like that. But I was like, their life may look like that. And you may want yours to look like that, but they're not having to care for their parent who's losing their mind. They don't have the challenges you have. And so you're not supposed to look like that. And so that gave me a little bit less shame, but I was still carrying a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I would say that the shame part of all of that, like having all of that to deal with, was by far more than enough. But to go back to our backpack analogy, I think the shame that I carried because I couldn't show up the way I wanted to as a mom, and because my life didn't look like what I wanted it to look like, and I wasn't able to show up the way other moms seem to be able to show up, with being really peaceful and calm in these different ways, that was an entire backpack on its own that I was carrying.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, one of the shame for me is like a security blanket. Like, it's one of those cozy security blankets that I just want to carry around with me all the time. And it's starting to melt away because I'm doing a therapy called EMDR. But, you know, when you go through,
I'm familiar, yeah.
Oh, I love EMDR. It's like voodoo magic. It's awesome. But it's like you want to let it go. And then one more thing happens in your life. So you grab it again. And you want to let it go. And then another thing happens in your life. And you just grab it again because it's so familiar. And it's so safe. And it's so cozy.
So familiar.
Yeah. But it's not
good
for
you. And the lie is that it's the thing that's going to protect us.
Yes.
And it doesn't.
Yeah. And it's really beautiful. For me, it's been beautiful to let pieces of the shame go. Mm-hmm. Through this work that I'm doing, because I think I didn't really carry shame when my son was diagnosed with cancer because I knew cognitively that was not my fault. I couldn't control that, you know.
Yeah.
And I really carry the shame with Hurricane Harvey. It's like, I can't predict a hurricane, you know. I can't tell you a hurricane's going to flood my house. But I think where the shame came in is that I couldn't protect my children from those events. Like, I wasn't protected as a child, so I was damn sure going to protect my children. But I can't protect them from the events that I can't predict. And that's really the root of Mom's Day Prepper. Like, you know, you really can't predict any of these events that happen in your motherhood, but you can prepare to lessen it. And one of those things is learning how to heal and let those bricks out of your backpack. And man, it's hard. It's not. I would rather train for a marathon than have to let go of the bricks.
I absolutely agree with you. I think that for me, one of the hardest things that I've had to do, and I'm still doing it. It's literally like an ongoing process. But the way that I showed up with my kids for years, because I could not handle all those backpacks I was carrying. And so while I wanted to be so badly the really peaceful, calm mother, the one who got down on the floor and played with her kids for long periods of time and took so much joy in doing all the things. And I tried so hard to be that mom. I couldn't. Like, the trauma was so overwhelming, and the disassociation and the way that my nervous system processed everything. Like, I was either running in hypervigilance trying to get it all done, and then I couldn't stay there. So I would crash and just, I had nothing, but all I could do was just lay on the couch and turn on the TV for them. And I was just, it was over. Like, my system didn't know how to stay present with them through all of that, as much as I deeply wanted to be. And so I was in so much shame over the way that I showed up as a mom, when I would explode with big emotions or shut completely down and not be available or step outside to talk to my friend on the phone and like just watch my kids through the window, basically caring for themselves while I'm outside crying on the phone with a friend, trying to find some level of co-regulation so I can go back inside and be some kind of idea of normal for them. Like, just all of those things, I've just carried the shame of not momming well for years. And finally went, Amy, why would you have done this well? Why would anyone in your shoes have done this well? Nobody would have. And just learning to forgive myself and to give myself compassion in that place. And then to go to my kids and say, that was really awful for you.
Yeah.
And I that's not the experience I wanted you to have. And I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. And what I can give you now is I can be in a safe space now for you to talk about some feelings that you have about things. I can be someone who can sit here and validate how hard that experience was for you. And I can be someone who, when you're all the parent pain that you have with me is coming up in your life, I can be a safe place to walk through that and repair with. And I'll help you pay for all the therapy that you're going to need, because I was your mother. Just, you know.
Girl, I'm already paying for that therapy.
Seriously. Me too. Me too. My oldest is seeing a great person now. And I'm like, I'm so glad that we can do that for you, because boy, Heidi, do you need it.
It's so wild, but there's so much good stuff that you're saying, and that it's like sparking something in me. Mm. And I'm I'm getting through Hank's accident. I'm like getting farther removed from my son's accident where he got hit by the car. But mm-hmm. like from cancer, I'm really far removed from cancer. So it's like, man, if I had heard your words when I was sitting on the oncology floor, it would have just inspired me so much. You
know, Carrie, I'm feeling a lot of emotion about this, but the words I'm saying, I needed those words when I was going through what I was going through, and I didn't have them then. And so maybe if that's what this podcast can do, if this podcast can be the thing that moms listen to when they're sitting in the hospital, when they're sitting in the funeral home, when they're sitting in, you know, whatever it is that they're having to walk through that's so horrible, if they can hear this, and all of a sudden, the lights go on and they go, oh, actually, I can give myself a lot of compassion in this moment instead of being swallowed up by the heaviness of it and the shame that comes with and all of the things.
Yeah. I mean, I think back about all the different times that I've gone through these Mom's Day moments, because my Mom's Day moments happened at the height of Facebook, at the height of social media. And so I wonder now what people thought I was going through based on what I chose to post and then what the reality was, because the reality was, you know, I was falling apart. We're still, we've healed and we've grown and we've got, you know, we've come into awareness about a lot of things, but I mean, we're still working hard to keep our head above water.
Yeah. And I think the truth is there are families out there that haven't had the extreme situations like you and I have had, but there are so many more that are doing the exact same thing, where they're just trying to survive. They're just trying to keep their head above water. They're just trying to, you know, have a peaceful, enjoyable, memorable Christmas in the midst of everything crumbling around them, or, you know, whatever. I'm saying that just because Christmas just passed, but there's so many more that it's like, I want moms to know you really are doing your very best.
You really are doing your very best.
You're doing your very best. And while it may not feel like your best is enough, there isn't more that you have to give that you could be giving. And you're not bad or wrong or broken or less than as a person because you don't have the more to give.
Yeah. So walk me through where in your life you have your three children and you're taking care of your mom mm-hmm. and she's on the decline. Mm-hmm. How did you get to where you are now from that moment?
Yeah. So I did a lot of inner healing work in that season. I had a couple of really significant moments in that process that honestly saved me. I remember a specific moment where I was on the verge of a full-blown nervous breakdown. You are going to cry and cry and cry and never be able to stop, and we're just going to have to put you in an institution. Like, I was at that place. And I had a really clear moment where it was like, you could keep crying and just disintegrate into that place, and you would be 100% justified in doing so. Or you can hold on to this truth that's been presented to you. And you can just know that there is hope mm-hmm. here for you mm-hmm. to come out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, and both, it was like both choices. I felt the truth of my story is that I had a picture of Jesus holding both options out in front of me. Mm. And he was like, you can hold on to my word that says that those who hunger and thirst for righteousness will be filled. You will get through this. You will get that. Or you could crumble and disintegrate into a full-blown nervous breakdown and lose your mind completely. And that's completely acceptable based on what you've dealt with. Both are equally choosable, and neither one is not preferable. You know, it was, I mean, yes, one is preferable, but you know, it was like,
I get it. Yeah.
I remember that moment and I was like, no, I want the promise. I want the hope. And I felt peace come over me. And it was like, okay, it's going to be okay. And so I just continued to walk that journey, and I continued to choose the inner healing, and I continued to learn how to love my mom. I mean, I had to walk through a lot of anger that I had towards her. I had a lot of anger at my mom for getting sick at the time when I needed her. And like, I needed you when I was a little girl, and you weren't available for me because you had my brother and he needed all of the attention. Now I'm a mom, and I need my mom's support and the grandmother's support. And now's when you lose your mind and I have to take care of you too. I was so angry. It felt so wildly unfair. And it took me a long time to work through that. And I got at some point to a place where I could say, I fully forgive my mom. She did not time this. She didn't choose this on purpose. Yes, she could have done other things to care for herself better. And I was able to just love her where she was. Now, by the time that I got there, she didn't really know who I was anymore.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So that was like, man, that's true self inner healing. You know, it's true self inner healing when the other party cannot respond or reciprocate. Yeah.
And that was just, honestly, that was just the grace of God. It was just the grace of God to give me that, because I couldn't have done, because she was sick and I was cared for her for 5 years, and I could not have done those 5 years. And just another piece of the story is that she had been, we had been caring for her, and she had been in nursing homes and in Alzheimer's facilities for 4 years when my brother had another major medical situation happen. And I remember the doctors called from my mom, they called from the home, and they said, she's starting to pocket her food, which is when dementia and Alzheimer's patients you'll put food in their mouth and they'll just sort of stick it in their cheek, but not chew and swallow it, is one of the signs that they're on the decline, that this is, we're headed to the end now. And they said she started to do this. And so I was prepared. And then like immediately the same day, my brother got hauled off in an ambulance for a major surgery. And there were all these things going on. And I just remember praying a very short, simple, let me just toss it out there prayer. God, please don't let my mom die while my brother's in the hospital, because I don't know how to bury my mom without her only son being able to be present for that.
Wow.
And I just sort of, I'm driving down the highway down I-20 in Texas. And I just kind of throw that prayer into the heavens, you know, and then moved on to all of my emotions and it was not spiritual at all. And miraculously, my mom stopped pocketing her food.
Wow.
She started swallowing and eating her food again. And that's not normal. Most of the time when Alzheimer's and dementia patients get to that point, they, you know, at least I was told that by the people at the facility that she was in. So my brother goes into this surgery. There were complications. He has to have another surgery. There were more complications. Long story short, he ends up spending an entire year in the hospital.
Wow.
And my mom survived that whole time. He gets out of the hospital, and 2.5 months later, she dies.
Wow.
So that time where we literally, we thought for a good like 6 months or more, we're going to have 2 funerals back to back.
Yeah, that must
have been rough. I'm going to lose my mom and my brother.
Yeah.
At the same time. And I'm still trying to parent small children. That was the height of the intensity and the toll that that, all of that, and especially that season took on my marriage was, it was crazy. We are still in the healing process with my marriage from that. She died in the end of August of 2017. And at the time, there were tears shed, but the most I felt was just relief. It's over. It's over. It's over. I don't have to carry this weight anymore. That was a huge backpack that I got to sit down at that time. It was just,
yeah.
That was it. And quite honestly, she's been gone for 6 years, and it's only been in the last couple of years that I will have thoughts of her before she got sick. So we're talking like, I don't know, 15 years ago or more. And I will think back to that mom, that version of her, and miss her. Mm. I'll miss that one. It's been a long time of, you know, of being able to get past the pain and the hardship of caring for her that was, and think back to how funny she was and making giblet gravy at Thanksgiving in the kitchen with this recipe that nobody ever wrote down and no one's ever been able to make Marsha's giblet gravy ever again. And, you know, just, and those things. And I will still have, and I've heard people say that grief is like this. I'll still have a fleeting thought every now and then, or I'll see a comedian that's really funny on TV or something. And I will have the thought, oh, I should call mom and tell her she would love that.
Mm.
You know, and I'm like, and I just get to have those moments of like, wow, I didn't know that I would ever feel again a genuine longing for my mom.
Wow.
Because she had just been caring for her was such a huge burden.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if that would be something that I would ever, that would ever be restored to my heart, would be an actual desire for a mom, you know? And that's something I've been able to give myself, experience for myself, and even, you know, to answer your question, how did I, you know, I've been working the last 2 years on doing a lot of reparenting of myself.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Going into my little Amy, who didn't get what she needed when she was so little, and letting mom Amy parent little Amy, giving her what I wish I had gotten, what I wish I could have given my own children when they were little, and I didn't have the tools then either. But doing that, and that's been able to heal a lot of those places where I feel like I get to grieve not having a mom, not having those moments with my mom now. Finally, you know, really 10 years after losing her, because, you know, she wasn't capable of being, you know, a mom for even while she was still alive, because she had really lost all of her faculties, and getting to feel that and fully grieve that now. You know, I even had an experience this past Christmas of going, I really wanted my mom here.
Yeah.
And I haven't wanted my mom around for years and years and years, because it was always so heavy and such a burden to care for her in the midst of the small, you know, having small kids too. And so it's been such a long journey. It's been, you say, how did I get here? I haven't given up.
Oh my gosh. That was like the most beautiful and perfect thing you could have said this entire time. I haven't given up. Oh my gosh. You don't give up. You don't give up. You want to. I want to. Oh, I man, Amy, I want to. But
so many days that I want to.
But you don't. You cannot give up. You cannot.
I haven't given up. I've just continued to believe that it's possible for me to feel safe and cared for and at peace inside of myself. And I keep doing the work to try and get there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you are so wise. You are. You are so wise.
Wow. It's, I appreciate that. I receive that. And I will tell you, it has definitely been a beautiful gift to have on the other side of paying a really high price.
Oh, listen, I'm gonna start crying here. Like, that price you pay is so big. And that's the price. Like, the price I feel that I've paid is what my children missed out on.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure.
And it keeps me up at night sometimes. It's hard. And I'm still, you know, it's like our journey of healing, I don't feel like there's a stop sign for healing. You know, there's no red lights for healing. Like, it's just green. You just keep going your whole life. Yeah. Because frankly, life in this world isn't going to stop putting the crap in your lap, right? No. Like, it's because that's just the world we live in. I mean, we live in a broken world. But watching our children, and you have older children too, so you might have better insight on this. But watching my two oldest Kim, really, okay, let's say my three oldest, which are 12, 17, and 19 years old, and how they have processed and dealt with these traumas that have landed in their childhood has been very difficult for me. Dealing with my own trauma, like, I was not equipped in the beginning to help them through theirs because I still had not gone through mine.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And I'm paying the price in more ways than one. You know, I've got one, my oldest, who's an overachiever and wonderful and beautiful and amazing. And, then I've got my second one who is like, hates me and loves me and then hates me and then loves me. Mm-hmm. And she, you know, she's going through her thing. And then I have the other, my third one in line is, she internalizes and she just holds it all in.
Yeah. Right?
And as, I don't know if you do this, but I'm looking at them going, no, 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 wait, wait, wait. This is how you get rid of it. This is how you get through it. This is how you heal from it. And at the same time, no one could have told me what to do, when to do it. I had to do it on my own.
100%. And yeah, I mean, like I said earlier, my heart breaks for what the really ugly lessons and habits that my kids have picked up and learned and beliefs that they have formed because of having lived through the trauma that I had a huge part in creating.
Yeah. Mm.
In their life, and me crawling into a bucket of shame and self-hatred over that will not make them better.
Yes. Amen.
It's not going to make them better. Because believe me, I've been there. I built a house in that bucket of shame. I decorated the walls. I put pictures up and painted, you know?
Yeah.
And it did not make my kids all of a sudden believe something different.
Yeah.
It didn't. But what we've done as a family, what we are doing as a family, because we are very much not there yet, but we're in processes. Well, one of the big tools that I have used is, there's a group called Stumball Consulting that I have been taking their courses for the last few years. And there's a particular course they have called The Pathway to Freedom that teaches you about your triggers.
Mm.
And it teaches you how to recognize when you're in a trigger, how to know, how to figure out where that trigger originated, and how to kind of get out of it and walk through it and clean up the mess that you made when you were in your trigger and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. It's those tools. Well, we did that class as a family this last fall. I had taken the class before on my own, but we did it, all of us as a family. I feel like there's more grace for each other.
Mm-hmm.
And there's more understanding of, this thing happened that I didn't want to happen, that has caused me to experience the world in this hard way, and I feel these things. And that doesn't make me bad or wrong, but the only person who can actually deal with that and get out of that feeling is me. They're learning how to take their own ownership for it in that way, you know?
Yeah, this is where I see the beauty in the ashes of your story, because had you not gone through the process that you went through, they will grow up to be very different men. And not that they would be better men or worse men, but they would just be different men. And look at the beauty that's coming out of this process.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really beautiful. It's really beautiful.
Thanks. Thanks. Yeah. I really hope that I live to see the fruit of all of this. And I don't think I'll see it all this side of heaven, but if I could see even just a little bit of it, I would love to see that. I would love to see the fruit of the price that we've paid as a family, that I've paid, that my husband has paid, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, Amy, this has been such a great conversation.
It really has, Carrie. I'm sorry we had to have so many stops in the store.
Well, you know, when you put two theater majors in front of a computer.
Oh my gosh.
We don't know. We just want the state. Everything's done for us. Totally. Build this for us. Do the lights for us. Like this technology stuff, you know.
I don't want to know that part of it. Yeah.
That's so funny. I'm so glad Laura connected us. I'm so glad she thought of you. Was that not such a God thing?
I love that. So Laura has said to me, she said this to me so many times. She's like, I just really want to sit down with God and understand why it is that you have had this ongoing theme of pain in your life and just keep, she's like, why does Amy get all of that? I'm like, I don't know, but I'm believing wholeheartedly that there's something big that's going to come out of it. It's not just for me to survive, you know?
Absolutely not. It's not just about survival.
No.
You know? Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. Well, you never know. It might be for this moment right here. You just don't know who's going to hear it.
Yeah.
And that's my hope. That's like my whole purpose with the podcast, because I just wish I'd had something like this all those years ago. I just wish I'd had someone, just encouragement, you know. Yeah. I mean, people were wonderful and amazing and we got support, but they didn't know what the heck we were going through, because they'd never experienced, Mom's Day moment at all. They didn't get it.
No. And the thing we need the most when we're in the middle of those moments is we need someone to just sit in the pain with us.
Oh, yes.
And know that like, you're not going to be left alone.
Mm-hmm.
Your pain is valid. Your experience is valid. I can just sit with you in the process.
Yeah.
And that's what we need. And it is what, it's one of the hardest things that we can give other people, because if we're still carrying around all of our own backpacks of pain, I don't know how to sit with you in yours.
Yes.
You know?
Oh.
But if we can heal our own stuff, then we have a lot more capacity to sit with other people in theirs.
Yeah.
Which everybody has pain and everybody needs that.
Yeah. Man. Thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you so much for asking me. I really feel so honored.